Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is Trump really prepared to walk away from the Ukraine conflict? What does walking away actually mean? Does it mean Europe will pick up the slack? We're told Trump isn't interested in attacking Iran, at least for now. Will the U.S. finally take yes for an answer? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He is an international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with Mark here in Moscow. Last week was tumultuous because we got a lot of different messages from a lot of different characters. But Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, kind of put it all in relief for us, essentially, in so many words, claiming that the U.S., Donald Trump, may throw in the towel. Those are my words, but that's what it sounded like to me. What was your take on this? Oh, and by the way, gentlemen, we'll find out in a few days. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah. So we've been talking about this as maybe a preferred Trump option to not being able to agree to Russia's terms for some time. And we questioned whether Trump would have, you know, the political will and the political capital to expend, because doubtless he would be extremely castigated for it on both sides of the Atlantic if he does so. But Rubio's words about time for the U.S. to move on, right? If an agreement isn't reached in a few days and the U.S. has other priorities, I don't think anyone else is reading it significantly differently. And there was some colorful language added to it that Trump would say, oh, you people are horrible and awful, and throwing up his arms, right, as a result of this. And, you know, whatever his interpretation, that's fine. Russia's happy to let him pose like this. The question is, this is would be such a good outcome for Russia. I find it hard to believe that he'll be able to walk away without at least throwing some sanctions Russia's way. Now, perhaps there'll be token sanctions, but there has to be some type of punishment or stick.
Well, yeah. So you're saying is that I'll throw this to George right now. Going back to the metaphor, throwing in the towel, but Russia will even have to pay for that. But it will be quite token. I mean, what else can you actually do when it comes to the area of sanctions? I mean, it just looks like a rhetorical way to get out of a mess that he claimed that he could solve and he can't, and because for all of his bluster, he seems unable to bend the will of the Europeans. So, I mean, Trump is looking at a lose-lose-lose situation here. George.
No, I agree with you, Peter. And I think it is a very difficult situation for Trump, because he did make all sorts of promises. Okay, he said 24 hours. Nobody took him seriously. Nobody even took him seriously that he would get it done before he became president, or he would get it done within the first 100 days. And people are willing to cut him some slack, but he's not making any progress. And that's the problem. I mean, he tried to do it via these interim ceasefires, 30-day ceasefire overall, then the 30-day ceasefire in the Black Sea, 30-day ceasefire on the energy infrastructure. None of that is working. And so he really is running out of options. The problem for him is, as Mark has pointed out, is that if he does walk away, he will obviously come in for a lot of attack from Democrats and from Republicans, but he will also be seen to be presiding over an American defeat. And yes, that, I think, would be very irksome.
Well, can we just flip that? I'll throw it to Mark now. The perception of a Russian win, that's the problem.
Yeah, I don't actually think we need to worry about that, because the Western media will never acknowledge that, right? Even when the Kiev regime's NATO planned offensive was decisively defeated at the first defensive line in the summer of 2023 in South Ukraine, the offensive failed, not that Russia utterly crushed the offensive. So whatever happens, it will be The media will declare it's Trump's fault, it's this fault, it's that fault, it's Biden's fault for not providing enough weapons fast enough. They will never, ever give credit to the Russian military and to the Russian political leadership for achieving victory. That, I have no doubt, it will never become a concern.
Well, I mean, in my introduction, I mentioned, well, Europe pick up the slack. George, I mean, I think rhetorically they'll have some kind of satisfaction, but their ability to influence events on the ground in Ukraine are about zero. Go ahead, George.
They are about zero. I mean, there is some thinking in Europe that maybe what they can do is rely wholly on drones. You know, they're just drone warfare. So that then, you know, we don't need it. All the other heavy weaponry, we can just rely on drones. I think it is ridiculous. I think initially there'll be a lot of hot air from Europe. Yeah, yeah, sure, we can take up the slack. We're going to do it. You know, we are steadfast. But I think they will realize that there's just simply no way that they can continue with this.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, George, what will make them happy if this scenario plays out is that Trump loses. That's enough for them. That's enough for them, I think. Okay, what this means for NATO? Well, Mark, what does that mean for NATO? I mean, this is the first real test of NATO, and it acquits itself pretty badly because the alliance is fragmenting.
Well, Mark, and it has to be said that this is the Western leadership's fault, right? Yeah. NATO did not have to get involved in this, right? Even if the plan was expansion of NATO to include Ukraine and, of course, Moldova and Georgia eventually, NATO, it's NATO's leadership, it's NATO's Secretary General that repeatedly put themselves at the forefront of this, right alongside the U.S. president, and said that a defeat for the Kiev regime in Ukraine would be a defeat for NATO. They said that, right? Yeah. Russian side never, you know, said that, at, you know, at least at the, you know, the presidential level, something like that. So it is going to be very hard. And there is a degree of fracturization in NATO, right? We see Hungary and Slovakia are the first and most obvious dissenters, but there are others, right? You know, there's other dividing lines rather than just support. There's also the continued British and French, you know, political theater fantasy of sending a paltry number of their own troops as human tripwires, which the Russian former president and prime minister and now still, you know, important figure on the Security Council, Dmitry Medvedev, point out that it will simply benefit the coffin production industry in the European Union if any European troops, you know, whether they're wearing a NATO hat, a British hat, a French hat, whatever hat they're wearing, that they'll find in Ukraine if they send them there. So, yes, NATO's credibility is going to be challenged. NATO's cohesion is going to be challenged going forward. The transatlantic relationship is damaged as a result of the split between Europe and the United States on the issue of how to proceed with a or not with a diplomatic settlement in Ukraine. I don't expect NATO to fall apart in a year or two, but I think we're going to see significant erosion and damage of the alliance. There's no question, but the alliance has no one to blame but themselves.
Exactly. You know, George, is there a potential scenario where Trump does a reverse and discontinues Biden's policy? Is that feasible? Is that possible?
I think it is possible. There's obviously a balance of forces.
Well, I mean, the reason why I'm asking you is that, you know, there've been meetings and telephone calls and everything, and all good, this warm talk about bilateral relationship. But the Biden policy is essentially still in play.
Exactly, the Biden policy is the same, and really, there's clearly a split within the administration. And Trump did this deliberately. That he put a number of people on one side and a number of people on the other side. So you've got the Marco Rubio and Sebastian Gorka. All there are various neocon hawks within the administration, and there are also the sort of the J.D. Vance, Tulsi Gabbards, and evidently Steve Witkoff on the other side. So and Trump is kind of doing this deliberately, kind of, well, you know, you got this and this. depends on which way I'm going to go. At the moment, he seems to be siding with the Steve Witkoffs, the J.D. Vances, and the Tulsi Gabbard. He could easily flip and decide to go with the horse. After all, what is Sebastian Gorka doing there? I mean, he's still there, and not, Trump's policy doesn't seem to be reflecting Gorka's worldview. So I assume Gorka is there should suddenly Trump decide to flip and pursue the Biden policy and then some, and an escalation of the Biden policy. And, you know, he's got a team in place like Rubio, but like presumably Pete Hegseth, and then the, you know, the rabid Gorka. So Trump could easily do it. The one thing I would say also about NATO is that if it does happen, complete defeat for Ukraine and Russia prevails, it's not going to be a bad news for NATO, because NATO will then mobilize and say, we have an enemy. This is an existential moment for NATO. We need to fight and mobilize. We have to...
You have to wonder, George.
Spending in order to ward off Russia.
Yeah, but you have to look at electoral politics. I mean, the people that have been pushing greater NATO expansion, demonizing Russia, they're losing elections. They're losing popularity. I mean, I think 5 years from now, we will hardly remember these political figures because disaster will be all written attached to their name.
But it's hard to know because you've got now Friedrich Merz.
I'm agreeing with you that you have the institution. It has a reason to. Oh, great. We have a reason to exist now. Mark, spending hundreds of billions of euros on this, that's the cost to have this kind of slogan. And I don't think that it's going to be very popular. I don't think electorally it's popular.
Well, that's the problem, of course, both at the state level and at the EU technocratic level, is, famously the democracy deficit in the EU, that there is a remove from this foreign policy and geopolitical agenda and what the people want. So while there may be consequences for some politicians in some countries, the managed democratic systems, right, and the bureaucracies may shield others.
All right, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. George, let me kick it off with you. The other big geopolitical news event has been what's going on, the parlay with the United States and Iran. And I have to admit to both of you, I'm a bit surprised, okay, and happily surprised, at least, that they're negotiating about talks to how to formulate talks, okay, and technical talks, which seems to me, now I could be wrong about this, George, you and I have talked about this on our podcast, but it seems like the JCPOA is alive, but in a different form, under a different name, with different people. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you are. I think there's clearly serious negotiations taking place. In other words, that both sides are engaged in serious talks. It's not just pro forma as a preliminary for launching attacks. And the Iranians seem to be fairly positive, fairly optimistic about the progress. I mean, if you're moving on now to the technical aspects of the discussions, then obviously they're making progress. And then next Saturday, there's going to be another meeting between Witkoff and the Iranian foreign minister. So far, it's clear that they're making progress. The problem with Trump always is, which way is he going to go? Which way does he fall? Clearly, this goes back to this New York Times article from a few days ago, in which it's outlined that there's clearly people within the administration who wanted to join Israel in a massive bombing attack on Iran. Netanyahu seemed to be under the impression that Trump was going to sign off on this. And instead, Netanyahu was told when he was summoned to Washington that, no, we're not going to do this. Instead, we're going to engage in negotiations. But presumably, the characters who are still in the administration and who want to bomb Iran are still there. And therefore, they are still waiting and saying, oh, no, look, these talks have failed. There's no point in continuing this. Iran is really, really dangerous. We need to pursue this. So that's why the question is, as you asked initially, will the United States now take yes for an answer? Yes. A deal is to be made. A deal is to be had here.
Well, there's certainly a deal is to be made, but Mark,
and
then, Mark.
Will Trump do it?
Will he do it? That's right. Will he do it? Well, Mark, I mean, a cynic, and the three of us are cynics on this program. That's why we're here. I tried negotiations. We went through the meeting with them. We had technical talk. I went the extra mile. That's a possibility as well. You know what I'm getting at, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, it is a possibility. But I'm not surprised at the way things have turned out, that both sides are, however, you know, pretense at a degree of remove or talking. During the Biden administration, we were a lot closer to war with Iran multiple times. And even the Biden administration walked back from it and actually arranged pantomime missile strikes, strikes on both sides, right? Political, military theater to save face and avoid it. Right now, Iran doesn't want a war with the United States because Russia, with its new strategic partnership, is going about building Iran a powerful conventional deterrent against attack on Iran, air defense and electronic warfare. So they won't need a nuclear system, but it will take a few years to build. The U.S., meanwhile, Trump wants to pivot to Asia, and the U.S. is facing a critical shortage of air defense missiles and long-range strike missiles, which Trump administration is wasting even more of than they already wasted in Ukraine, playing whack-a-mole against the Houthis in Yemen. So they don't have the capability to defend both Israel and the network of U.S. military bases in the Middle East from Iran's long-range missile and drone capability. So both sides have a reason, to avoid the conflict. It's more about assuaging Trump's ego, because this is going to be JCPOA 2.0, where Trump will say it's much tougher than what Obama negotiated, and the Iranians will say this is much better for us than what the JCPOA is. The problem is Israel. Israel is now talking about making their own limited strike on Iran, even if the U.S. That's an obvious attempt once again by Netanyahu to draw both sides into war. And this parallels the situation that the U.S. has with the EU in Ukraine. The EU wants to drag the U.S. into war against direct war against Russia in Ukraine. Israel wants to draw the U.S. into direct war with Iran. And Trump has got to keep both of his vassals slash allies who are attempting to wag the dog at bay.
You know, and George, it seems, again, it all boils down to Trump's vanity, his ego. I mean, he wants a win. So, I mean, I have my doubts that Marco Rubio speaks for him at all on anything, okay? I mean, I think, again, it's a mystery to me why he's even there. As a pole vault to the presidency. I mean, that's all it's all about to me. His foreign policy experience is nothing to write home about. But Trump really wants a win. And I think, you know, when we look back at the JCPOA, you know, and I was a big supporter of it, big critic of the Obama administration, but I thought that was a win for him. And, you know, be fair, it was a win. That's the only way he's going to get out of this box here, because it was something that it wasn't strong bipartisan, but it was what it was believed to be. And one of the reasons why I liked it is that it was a segue to work on other quote unquote problems. Okay. This Trump needs this. He needs this right now. When if we look at where are Trump's wins in the world, the trade war isn't going very well. Oh, you get my point, George.
No, I think that this would indeed be a win for Trump. And of course, people are going to point out, oh, but this is exactly the same as the JCPOA. You walked away from it in 2018. Now you're signing something that's exactly the same. It doesn't matter. He's got a win. He's got an agreement. Everybody's happy. They're popping champagne corks. And therefore, this kind of this quibbling won't matter because you've got a deal. Now, the Democrats are not in a good position to attack Trump if he signs the JCPOA, because after all, it's their deal. It's their, you know, it's their leader who had signed the original. Now, the Republicans will be the ones who will be very upset about it, all the Tom Cottons and Ted Cruz's, but they can't really go too much against Trump, because Trump is the leader of the party. He's beloved by the essentially the new Republican base. So if they have any hopes for 2028, they're not going to antagonize Trump's base.
And no Republican is going to win the White House based on the Iran policy. It's just not there. You know, Mark, Netanyahu really wanted this. He wanted it very badly. I don't think he was summoned to the White House. I think he desperately wanted to get Trump's ear, because I personally think that because of what's going on in Gaza, he needs a diversion to finish up business there. I think that's something, and plus all of his legal woes. Trump is working for legacy. That's what he's all about. It's legacy right now. Netanyahu is fighting for survival. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, I think Trump is no more interested in fighting a war with Iran in the Middle East than he is in fighting a war with Russia in Ukraine, right? He wants to avoid both conflicts. What is more interesting to me is that Iran, before going into these indirect talks with the U.S. and Iman, they had a meeting with Russian and Chinese officials. And coming out before going into the second round, again, the Iranian foreign minister, Raji, came to Moscow and spoke with at least Lavrov, potentially Putin. And Russia is once again offering, well, if you want to deal on the nuclear issue with Iran, we can become involved in the talks as a facilitator of nuclear inspections, control of nuclear enrichment, and the like. And we see this again and again and again if we take a big picture view over the last few years. Every time the U.S. tries to focus, to surge against either Russia militarily or with sanctions, against China with tariffs, or against Iran, it's left having to deal with the other two at the same time and weakening their position against the other two. This is the strength of not just the Russian-Chinese bilateral relationship, but increasingly the Russian-Chinese-Iranian tripartite, which is stymieing U.S. attempts to go after any one of the three for want of weakening its position too much against the other two.
Yeah, and that's wonderfully put, because, George, that was I have argued for a very long time that the NATO's Ukraine proxy war against Russia was to knock Russia out off the pedestal as a means to start focusing attention primarily on China, the famous pivot. But Mark has characterized it just perfectly. The more you go after one of the three, the more they coalesce and they can push back. And maybe, hopefully, you know, if that's the lesson that Donald Trump learns, maybe he'll be less prone to going to war. That would be a good thing. Okay, George?
I think it would be a good thing. I really don't think that Trump is a wartime president. I don't think that's the way he thinks. I just don't think this is at all interesting to him.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a businessman. He's really... Yeah,
but that's a really good... George is right,
America
though.
America rich. And that's the key here. You know, he wants America, when he says America great again, he doesn't mean it in any military great power sense, but that America will be the sort of the factory of the world, the industrial powerhouse of the world. That's his goal.
Before we go, gentlemen, I want to ask you real briefly, are we learning that Trump isn't so easily talked into things? Real quick, Mark.
Yeah, I just disagree. I mean, unless you consider that the people in Yemen and Gaza don't count as people, Trump is not a peacemaker. He's waging war. We just don't call it war.
Yeah, we've all agreed that
that's a different. That's Israel's war. That is Israel's war. It's not Trump's war.
That's how he looks at it. All right, gentlemen, it always gets to a heated point as we end. Okay, I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow, and of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk rules.